Chapter 68. The Study of a Loving Heart. Sir Barnard and Lady Skettles, very good people, resided in a pretty villa at Fulham, on the banks of the Thames, which was one of the most desirable residences in the world, when a rowing match happened to be going past, but had its little inconveniences at other times, among which may be enumerated the occasional appearance of the river in the drawing room, and the contemporaneous disappearance of the lawn and shrubbery. Sir Barnet Skettles expressed his personal consequence chiefly through an antique gold snuff box, and a ponderous silk pocket kerchief, which he had an imposing manner of drawing out of his pocket like a banner, and using with both hands at once. Sir Barnet's object in life was constantly to extend the range of his acquaintance. Like a heavy body dropped into water, not to disparage so worthy a gentleman by the comparison, it was in the nature of things that Sir Barnet must spread an ever-widening circle about him, until there was no room left. Or, like a sound in air, the vibration of which, according to the speculation of an ingenious modern philosopher, may go on traveling forever through the interminable fields of space, nothing but coming to the end of his moral tether could stop Sir Barnet Skettles in his voyage of discovery through the social system. Sir Barnet was proud of making people acquainted with people. He liked the thing for its own sake, and it advanced his favorite object too. For example, if Sir Barnet had the good fortune to get hold of a law recruit or a country gentleman and ensnared him to his hospitable villa, Sir Barnet would say to him, on the morning after his arrival, "Now, my dear sir, is there anybody you would like to know? Who is there you would wish to meet? Do you take any interest in writing people, or in painting or sculpturing people, or in acting people, or in anything of that sort?" Possibly the patient answered yes, and mentioned somebody, of whom Sir Barnet had no more personal knowledge than of Ptolemy the Great. Sir Barnet replied that nothing on earth was easier, as he knew him very well. Immediately called on the aforesaid somebody, left his card, wrote a short note, "My dear sir, penalty of your eminent position friend at my house naturally desirous Lady Skettles and myself participate trust that genius being superior to ceremonies, you will do us the distinguished favor of giving us the pleasure, etc., etc." And so killed a brace of birds with one stone, dead as doornails. With the snuff box and banner in full force, Sir Barnet Skettles propounded his usual inquiry to Florence on the first morning of her visit. When Florence thanked him, and said there was no one in particular whom she desired to see, it was natural she should think with a pang of poor lost Walter. When Sir Barnet Skettles, urging his kind offer, said, "My dear Miss Dombey, are you sure you can remember no one whom your good papa, to whom I beg you present the best compliments of myself, and Lady Skettles when you write, might wish you to know?" It was natural, perhaps, that her poor head should droop a little, and that her voice should tremble as it softly answered in the negative. Skettles Jr., much stiffened as to his cravat, and sobered down as to his spirits, was at home for the holidays, and appeared to feel himself aggrieved by the solicitude of his excellent mother that he should be attentive to Florence. Another and a deeper injury under which the soul of young Barnet chafed was the company of Dr. and Mrs. Blimmer, who had been invited on a visit to the paternal roof tree, and of whom the young gentleman often said he would have preferred their passing the vacation at Jericho. "Is there anybody you can suggest now, Dr. Blimmer?" said Sir Barnet Skettles, turning to that gentleman. "You are very kind, Sir Barnet," returned Dr. Blimmer. "Really, I am not aware that there is, in particular. I like to know my fellow men in general, Sir Barnet. What does Terence say? Anyone who is the parent of a son is interesting to me. Has Mrs. Blimmer any wish to see any remarkable person?" asked Sir Barnet, courteously. Mrs. Blimmer replied, with a sweet smile and a shake of her sky-blue cap, that if Sir Barnet could have made her known to Cicero, she would have troubled him, but such an introduction not being feasible, and she already enjoying the friendship of himself and his amiable lady, and possessing with the doctor her husband their joint confidence in regard to their dear son here young Barnet was observed to curl his nose, she asked no more. Sir Barnet was fain, under these circumstances, to content himself for the time with the company assembled. Florence was glad of that, for she had a study to pursue among them, and it lay too near her heart, and was too precious and momentous, to yield to any other interest. There were some children staying in the house, children who were as frank and happy with fathers, and with mothers as those rosy faces opposite home, children who had no restraint upon their love, and freely showed it. Florence sought to learn their secret, sought to find out what it was she had missed, what simple art they knew, and she knew not, how she could be taught by them to show her father that she loved him, and to win his love again. Many a day did Florence thoughtfully observe these children. On many a bright morning did she leave her bed, when the glorious sun rose, and walking up and down upon the river's bank, before anyone in the house was stirring, look up at the windows of their rooms, and think of them, asleep, so gently tended and affectionately thought of. Florence would feel more lonely then, than in the great house all alone, and would think sometimes, that she was better there than here, and that there was greater peace in hiding herself than in mingling with others of her age, and finding how unlike them all she was. But attentive to her study, though it touched her to the quick at every little leaf she turned in the hard book, Florence remained among them, and tried with patient hope, to gain the knowledge that she wearied for. Ah, how to gain it! How to know the charm in its beginning! There were daughters here, who rose up in the morning, and lay down to rest at night, possessed of fathers' hearts already. They had no repulse to overcome, no coldness to dread, no frown to smooth away. As the morning advanced, and the windows opened one by one, and the dew began to dry upon the flowers, and youthful feet began to move upon the lawn, Florence, glancing round at the bright faces, thought what was there she could learn from these children? It was too late to learn from them. Each could approach her father fearlessly, and put up her lips, to meet the ready kiss, and wind her arm about the neck, that bent down to caress her. She could not begin by being so bold. Oh! Could it be that there was less and less hope as she studied more and more? She remembered well, that even the old woman who had robbed her, when a little child whose image and whose house, and all she had said and done, were stamped upon her recollection, with the enduring sharpness of a fearful impression made at that early period of life, had spoken fondly of her daughter, and how terribly even she had cried out in the pain of hopeless separation from her child but her own mother, she would think again, when she recalled this, had loved her well. Then, sometimes, when her thoughts reverted swiftly to the void between herself and her father, Florence would tremble, and the tears would start upon her face, as she pictured to herself her mother living on, and coming also to dislike her, because of her wanting the unknown grace, that should conciliate that father naturally, and had never done so from her cradle. She knew, that this imagination did wrong to her mother's memory, and had no truth in it, or base to rest upon. And yet she tried so hard to justify him, and to find the whole blame in herself, that she could not resist its passing, like a wild cloud, through the distance of her mind. There came among the other visitors, soon after Florence, one beautiful girl, 3 or 4 years younger than she, who was an orphan child, and who was accompanied by her aunt, a gray-haired lady, who spoke much to Florence, and who greatly liked, but that they all did, to hear her sing of an evening, and would always sit near her at that time, with motherly interest. They had only been 2 days in the house, when Florence, being in an arbor in the garden one warm morning, musingly observant of a youthful group upon the turf, threw some intervening boughs, and wreathing flowers for the head of one little creature among them who was the pet and plaything of the rest, heard this same lady and her niece, in pacing up and down a sheltered nook close by, speak of herself. Is Florence an orphan like me, aunt? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the child. No, my love. She has no mother, but her father is living. Apostrophe, is she in mourning for her poor mama now? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired the child quickly. No, for her only brother. Apostrophe, has she no other brother? Apostrophe, apostrophe, none. Apostrophe, no sister? Apostrophe, apostrophe, none. Apostrophe, I am very, very sorry. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the little girl as they stopped soon afterwards to watch some boats, and had been silent in the meantime. Florence, who had risen when she heard her name, and had gathered up her flowers, to go and meet them, that they might know of her being within hearing, resumed her seat and work, expecting to hear no more. But the conversation recommenced next moment. Florence is a favorite with everyone here, and deserves to be, I am sure, apostrophe, said the child, earnestly. Where is her papa? Apostrophe, the aunt replied, after a moment's pause, that she did not know. Her tone of voice arrested Florence, who had started from her seat again, and held her fastened to the spot, with her work hastily caught up to her bosom, and her two hands saving it from being scattered on the ground. He is in England, I hope, aunt? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the child. I believe so. Yes, I know he is, indeed. Apostrophe, has he ever been here? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I believe not. No. Apostrophe, is he coming here to see her? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I believe not. Is he lame, or blind, or ill, aunt? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked the child. The flowers that Florence held to her breast began to fall when she heard those words, so wonderingly spoke she held them closer, and her face hung down upon them. Kate, apostrophe, said the lady, after another moment of silence, I will tell you the whole truth about Florence as I have heard it, and believe it to be. Tell no one else, my dear, because it may be little known here, and your doing so would give her pain. Apostrophe, I never will. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed the child. I know you never will, apostrophe, returned the lady. I can trust you as myself. I fear then, Kate, that Florence's father cares little for her, very seldom sees her, never was kind to her in her life, and now quite shuns her and avoids her. She would love him dearly, if he would suffer her, but he will, not though for no fault of hers. And she is greatly to be loved, and pitied by all gentle hearts. Apostrophe, more of the flowers that Florence held fell scattering on the ground. Those that remained were wet, but not with dew, and her face dropped upon her laden hands. Poor Florence! Dear, good Florence! Apostrophe, cried the child. Do you know why I have told you this, Kate? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the lady. That I may be very kind to her, and take great care, to try to please her. Is that the reason, aunt? Apostrophe, partly, apostrophe, said the lady, but not all. Though we see her so cheerful, with a pleasant smile for everyone, ready to oblige us all, and bearing her part in every amusement here. She can hardly be quite happy, do you think she can, Kate? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I am afraid not, apostrophe, said the little girl. And you can understand, apostrophe, pursued the lady, why her observation of children who have parents who are fond of them, and proud of them like many here, just now should make her sorrowful in secret? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, dear aunt, apostrophe, said the child, I understand that very well. Poor Florence! Apostrophe, apostrophe, more flowers strayed upon the ground, and those she yet held to her breast trembled, as if a wintry wind were rustling them. My Kate, apostrophe, said the lady, whose voice was serious, but very calm and sweet, and had so impressed Florence from the first moment of her hearing it, of all the youthful people here, you are her natural and harmless friend. You have not the innocent means that happier children have, apostrophe, there are none happier, and apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed the child, who seemed to cling about her, as other children have, dear Kate, of reminding her of her misfortune. Therefore I would have you, when you try to be her little friend, try all the more for that, and feel that the bereavement you sustained, thank heaven. Before you knew its weight gives you claim and hold upon poor Florence. Apostrophe, but I am not without a parent's love, and I never have been, apostrophe said the child, with you. Apostrophe, however that may be, my dear, apostrophe returned the lady, your misfortune is a lighter one than Florence's, for not an orphan in the wide world can be so deserted as the child who is an outcast from a living parent's love. Apostrophe, the flowers were scattered on the ground like dust, the empty hands were spread upon the face, and orphaned Florence, shrinking down upon the ground, wept long and bitterly. But true of heart and resolute in her good purpose, Florence held to it as her dying mother held by her upon the day that gave Paul life. He did not know how much she loved him. However long the time in coming, and however slow the interval, she must try to bring that knowledge to her father's heart one day or other. Meantime she must be careful in no thoughtless word, or look, or burst of feeling awakened by any chance circumstance, to complain against him, or to give occasion for these whispers to his prejudice. Even in the response she made the orphan child, to whom she was attracted strongly, and whom she had such occasion to remember, Florence was mindful of him. If she singled her out too plainly, Florence thought, from among the rest, she would confirm in one mind certainly, perhaps in more, the belief that he was cruel and unnatural. Her own delight was no set-off to this. What she had overheard was a reason, not for soothing herself, but for saving him, and Florence did it, in pursuance of the study of her heart. She did so always. If a book were read aloud, and there were anything in the story that pointed at an unkind father, she was in pain for their application of it to him, not for herself. So with any Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.